Welcome to the Hockey Strength Podcast, the official podcast of SCAP, the Strength and Conditioning Association of Professional Hockey. My name is Pat Dugan, and our guest today is Coach B. B is currently serving as the Associate Athletic Director, Director of Athletic Performance at Quinnipiac University. We talk a lot about how B implemented his system to cultivate leadership, drive personal development in young athletes, and win championships. Coach B has been in the performance field for over 20 years. He is a sought-after speaker and consultant and an all-around great guy. This was an especially fun episode for me as it was my first as the host of the show. So I hope you have fun listening and I hope you learn a thing or two. Without further ado, here's Coach B. B, thanks for hopping on. Like we were just talking off the camera, you're my first one on this the new reign of me being in charge of this. So I appreciate you taking the time.
I feel honored, and no, it's been a long time coming, and I'm glad to have a conversation with you today, and hopefully all the listeners will be able to get something out of it.
Awesome. Well, give the listeners a little bit. Give us a quick little 30-second intro of who you are and what you do.
So I'm currently the Associate Athletic Director of Athletic Performance at Quinnipiac University. I've been here fortunate to be here for 16 years now. I've been a strength conditioning coach for well over 20 years, started at UConn, worked at Holy Cross, and, was the first full-time strength coach here. And, it's been a journey to be able to start a program from scratch, but, you know, the biggest thing is just being able to influence and impact a lot of people's lives over my career has been nothing short of extremely rewarding.
Awesome. Yeah. Like you said, you're the first coach at Quinnipiac, and you know, going from first coach in the history of the program to building that program out to winning a national championship with men's ice hockey. Can you kind of give us that 30,000 foot view? I guess specifically on how you implemented your way of cultivating leadership and how it's kind of changed from day one to where you are now.
Yeah, I think this is, you know, something that I was fortunate to be able to witness being at the University of Connecticut. I was surrounded by champions. Like every year that I was in school there, from being an undergrad to a student assistant to a graduate assistant, at least one team on campus won a national championship. And, you know, between men's basketball, women's basketball, men's soccer, it was, and then also seeing our football team kind of move from 1AA up to 1A, I saw and I was surrounded by winning. Like I was fortunate enough at a young time in my career to understand what it took to win and what it looked like. And it's something that wasn't easy to do, but the staff that was there at the time, Coach Martin, Andrew Hootie, Chris West, Tina Murray, I was just surrounded by a lot of really good coaches that understood not just the physical side of things, but also the psychology of winning and what it took on a day in and day out basis to try to help cultivate that, you know, that winning environment, you know, from the weight room all the way out to the fields, into the courts, into the rink. So that time period formulated a lot of what I thought was extremely important. And then my time at Holy Cross, and working with Mike Boyle too, really got me to understand the physiology side of things and how to train physically and how to design well-rounded training programs and how to prepare. And I was fortunate enough to be able to take both of those experiences, understanding how to train the body as well as understanding how to train the mind, and really formulated my philosophy and the kind of non-negotiables of when I came to Quinnipiac. I kind of had an idea of what I wanted to do and what I wanted to implement. Like I wanted to create an environment that was extremely positive. It was safe and it was disciplined, where every single student athlete was held to the same standard, right? Cause you're not going to win in the weight room. But the other thing that's going to really good in the weight room is there is no depth chart. So everybody's treated the same, regardless if you're a first line player, or a bottom, you know, you're a depth guy, top pair, third string goalie. It doesn't matter. Like everybody has the same voice within the weight room and same responsibilities, and they're held to the same standard. And they kind of formulate our non-negotiable, which is accountability, respect, and work ethic. And those at the core, that's the number one thing that we do and that we try to teach within the weight room is you've got to make sure you hold yourself to the highest standard possible. You're willing to hold yourself accountable You show yourself and you treat others with respect. You learn how to discipline yourself, and then work ethic. And so those are the three big things that I really wanted to get across to every single student athlete from day one. And that started with, you know, having initial meetings with each team and treating every single person on the team like they were first years or they were freshmen, because nobody had ever worked with me before. So getting them to understand where it was that I was coming from, and really getting through to them that I know what it took to win and win at a high level. Because that's what everyone aspired to want to do when I got to Quinnipiac, is that the president of the school wanted to put hockey and basketball on the map. And he understood that dedicating resources towards those programs was going to be a big way for them to be able to create a national presence for their school. And, you know, he wasn't shy of investing into those sports and made it known that, you know, Frozen Fours were the goal. NCAA tournaments were the goal, and that winning championships was the goal. And so it had trickled down. So it's nice when you have that level of support and you understand it, that your efforts are going to be supported. Because sometimes you may want to win as a coach or as a strength coach, but administration may not have the same kind of goals. And so they may not support you financially or fiscally as well as you may need to try to, you know, win at the highest level. So I was really fortunate that Quinnipiac aspired to win championships. And it allowed me to be able to cultivate and really teach the methodology of what it was going to take to win on a daily basis. And so a lot of that comes down to how you show up, right? And so there's some lettering above the door when you walk into the weight room. It says, be responsible for the energy you bring into the space. And so we taught them from day one, like, negative energy will not be tolerated, right? If you're going to complain, you're going to bitch, you're going to moan about something, like, don't do it here. And, you know, that took a long time to be able to change, because a lot of the kids that were already embedded within the program, they had some success, but they were never held to a standard within the weight room, right? Because they never had somebody that was there full time that was going to look out for them and try to teach them these things that ultimately transcend beyond the ice, right? They're things that you're going to need for life. And so getting to understand, like, how you show up is first and foremost probably the most important thing over what we're actually doing within a training session. Cause it doesn't matter if we're going to do conditioning, we're going to do a recovery day, we're going to work on, you know, just strength development, lower body, upper body, like, that stuff doesn't matter. Like, it really comes down to, you know, what's the approach that you're taking on a day in and day out basis? What's the energy you have? Are you enthusiastic about training? Are you going to display a high level of effort? Are you mentally engaged into what you're actually doing? Are you going to encourage your teammates, right? Like, those are the things that are going to be the most important to me. And, you know, it took some time to try to be able to get that message across to everybody that came through the weight room, but sooner or later they started to understand and they started to recognize that the changes that they felt internally, directly impacted the things that they were able to do externally, like, whether it be performance or performance in the classroom or how they treated others and within the relationships that they had. And again, those are all qualitative things. They're not very quantitative, but based on the feedback that they would give me, they realized, you know, they would show up. I had an athlete in my office actually yesterday. He transferred here and he was only here for 1 year, but he'd said, he's like, the things that I learned from within the weight room have helped me. And he's going to go to medical school. And he's like, those are the things that helped me the most, is just the daily approach that I had and not being negative and not being and not complaining about my situation, my circumstances that I'm in, and trying to figure out how can I actually improve and how can I actually get better. So I don't know if that answers your question, but, like, it's a long-winded approach to understanding and embracing the process of improvement, and understanding that it doesn't start with the physical things that you do. It all starts with the mental things that you willingly choose to do on a daily basis.
I love that. Just as you're talking, you know, I'm sitting here with a list of questions to ask you. And just as you're talking, I just, you know, there's 1,000 different branches I could go off of.
Go in them.
So that's amazing. But the one thing that I heard you say multiple times that I do want to dive into is you use the word teach a lot. And I feel, at least in my experience, that there have been coaches that like to dictate, this is what we're going to do, and this is how we're going to do it. And there are coaches that like to teach and say, this is why we're going to do it, and things like that. Is that kind of your experience as well? And can you speak on, you know, you're the head of, you know, how many teams but you directly work with men's and women's ice hockey and basketball. So I would imagine, you know, that teaching mindset to, you know, have that buy-in across your entire swath of teams when you're not there and when you can't dedicate extensive hours to them goes a long way.
Yeah, I think, you know, when you look at what we are and what we do, and I think it's in the podcast title, we're coaches, right? We are coaches first and foremost. And the way I've always looked at what coaching is, it's an opportunity and it's a responsibility that we should never take lightly. We have the opportunity and ability to try to influence and impact other people's lives. And through those, if you look at it from that lens, and if you look at it through that perspective, it's ultimately teaching, right? And so what we have to be able to do is understand that we are teaching others what we think is important or what we think we know, right? Based on the things that we've educated ourselves on. And I had another conversation with an intern this week about this too, is don't tell people what to do, teach them what to do. You know, like part of my approach to coaching is I want them to be able to operate if I wasn't there. If the athlete is so dependent on the coach, and again, this is my opinion, you know, everybody has their own methods and how they do things, but if the athlete becomes so dependent on the coach, when will they ever learn how to have true ownership of what they're actually doing? Because they're just being dictated and told what to do on every single occasion. And I don't know about you, and if you do this with the Providence Bruins, but are you going to block a shot? Are you going to score a goal?
Yeah.
Are you going to check somebody? Like no, that's not what you're going to do, and that's not what I'm going to do. So they need to be able to understand how to operate and implement the things that you teach them on a regular basis and incorporate that into their routine or into their preparation or into the things that they do on a daily basis with the habits that you're trying to get them to understand how to form. So teaching is at the core of what I believe, right? Like we are teachers and we have to be able to communicate our message well enough and effectively enough to inspire and empower others to do things that they didn't think that they could do on their own. Right. And so I'm a big fan of really teaching the why. Like that kind of goes into our philosophy. And when it comes to like training, like number one is try to reduce chance of injury. Second thing is to try to make better athletes. And the third thing is educate them. And so we want to make sure that we can educate them about why we do what we do. Because if you compare us to like, you know, other college hockey programs or other even strength conditioning programs, if you take into account every single sport that we have here, everybody's going to do similar things, right? Everybody's going to, you know, they're going to sprint, they're going to jump, they're going to do some sort of lower body strength training. They're going to do some sort of upper body strengthening. So it's not about what you're doing, but rather how and why you're doing it. And if you can educate the people that you're working with and really get them to understand why, and not just tell them why you're doing it, but really try to teach them, ask them, do they understand what you're trying to tell them? I think, and I found it to work, where they start to develop ownership in what they're actually doing. And when they own what they're doing, they're going to usually invest a little bit more effort. And when you invest a little bit more effort, 9 times out of 10, you're probably going to get more out of the return and you're going to get better yields. So that's the way we look at things. It's flat out. And I'll tell athletes like, listen, it's your career. It's your season. It's your training session right now. It's not mine. And I can guide you along the way and kind of teach you and tell you what you should do on a regular basis. But at the end of the day, you got to make those choices. You know, there's one thing that we'll do like in our preseason, because this is for usually for both hockey teams, but primarily for our men's team, is we practice right in the middle of the day. So we don't always get the opportunity to try to do a team warm up together. So in the preseason period, when we have a little bit more time, I'll expose them to different means and different methods that they can, that they could use as different warm ups. And I'll tell them like, listen, you need to figure out what you like to do on a regular basis, because we're not doing a team warm-up, right? Because some people come out of class, some days we'll lift, some days you got meeting or video, some days you're going to go special teams, are going to be on the ice early. So a lot of it's going to be dictated based on what we have from a time allotment and then what you like to feel helps you get ready on a regular basis. And so that's part of the methods. And then you'll start to see in season, you know, everybody does like different routines, and which I'm okay with, because it's at the end of the day, it's up to them what makes them feel better so they can have the best practice. And then you have to evaluate. And so that's a lot about this empowerment and ownership that we really try to get through to our student athletes.
Love it. So how do you identify the leaders on the team? And then second question based off of that is how you handle the athletes that don't, that really don't buy in.
Oh, that's a secret sauce right there.
Yeah. $1 million.
How do I identify? Yeah. I mean, I think honestly, a lot of it, Pat, is going to be context dependent. How do you identify the leaders within your group? It's, you have to put them in positions that require leadership, you know, first and foremost. So, my definition of leadership is, and I kind of said it before, it's the ability to influence others to do positively influence others to do what they didn't think that they could do on their own. To me, leading by example isn't leading at all. You're just doing what you're supposed to do. Like ultimately true leadership is like bringing somebody along with you and showing them and explaining them and teaching them how to do things. So, that being said, what we do within the weight room is we'll oftentimes, like once we go through a training session once or twice, I'll say to player A, you're going to run today's warm up. So it gives them an opportunity to lead the entire group, or you're going to explain the core, or you're going to go through today's session. So you give them opportunities where they have to public speak. You put them on the spot. Sometimes you don't prepare them. You got to see like how engaged are you today? Like, are you actually being mindful of what we're actually doing today? And sometimes they perform flawlessly, or sometimes they perform and they fall flat on their face. But those opportunities where you teach them and say, it's okay, right? It's okay to be a little nervous. It's okay to be a little anxious when you're speaking in front of everybody else, because maybe that's a position you've never been in before. And so we want to get them to expose them to different opportunities where they can lead. And they're not, you know, going to lead somebody through a whole training session or lead somebody through the entire season. It's just an opportunity where we can see and put people in different opportunities and positions and find out how do they respond. And then the other things that we kind of evaluate leadership is you can kind of see on a regular approach, how do they show up every single day, right? And how much influence do they have over the team, whether it be positive or negative? Like, are they, like I said before, are they just doing what they're supposed to do? Or are they actually helping other people along? Because leadership is, it's not only by one person on a team. It's got to be done by a lot of people on a team to really effectively help a group succeed at a high level. So those are the ways that we kind of evaluate things, is really just watch what they do on a regular basis, watch what they say on a regular basis. How do they treat others? How are they helping others? How do they public speak when you put them in those positions? So those are the biggest things we do. And then to answer the second part of it, how do you bring people along that may not necessarily buy in all the time? A lot of it's education. You know, sometimes it might be one-on-one conversations. Sometimes it might be calling them out in front of a group. You know what I mean? But a lot of it depends on, you got to know that individual and you got to know how they respond. You got to try to figure out what makes them tick. Because sometimes somebody may not be able to handle being called out in front of everybody. They might be embarrassed and they might be more spiteful of you. But a lot of it comes down to, do they know why you're saying what you say on a regular basis? Have they developed a trust within you to allow them to, where you can actually help them grow and try to get to the next level or improve their performance somehow? So trust is crucial in any kind of relationship. And I think it's really important in those situations where you might not have somebody that necessarily buys in all the time, but allows you to have those conversations where they can maybe, you know, bring their wall down a little bit to try to let you in, and you can try to find out what makes them tick a little bit more effectively. So you can try to help educate them so they can maybe buy in a little bit more. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, and you're cueing me back to the original slide of the great Mike Boyle's internship, extraordinaire meeting of no one cares how much you know until they know how much you care.
Yep.
And I think that, like I said, that was, you know, his first slide in his presentation, and that kind of speaks to what you were just saying about, you know, trust and relationship building and things like that. If they don't think you care, they're not going to care about what you say about them.
It's so different now. I think you experienced it probably like in pro hockey, right? Like your roster can turn over year to year. You could lose players mid season. You know what I mean? Whether they be cut, whether they're going to get called up, like you might have a limited amount of time to be able to try to earn somebody's trust. And, you know, at this level, you know, the transfer rule has changed the game completely, right? So you can, kids can transfer, you know, after 1 year if they don't feel like it, or, you know, if they're underage, halfway, they don't like their experience, they can go play juniors, right? So they can leave at certain times and opportunities. So you've got a limited amount of time where you can try to earn their trust. Now, the good thing that I have going for me is, like, I've been here for 16 years. So, a lot of the older kids that have been through the program kind of help indoctrinate the young ones right away. And they'll say, you know, you better listen to Coach B because he can really help you. So that's one of those things that's kind of helped me over the course of time, is that I've been able to build trust and build equity within the people that have already come through the program. So where the young ones kind of already know, all right, I better fall in line kind of quickly. And that's a product of our culture, right? The things that we've done on a consistent basis to try to help us earn that kind of blind faith or trust. And I'll gotta be honest, it does waver, right? Like we this past year we've had a number of transfers that came from other universities, right? And some have been there for 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, and they've been entrenched in one culture, right? They've been entrenched in one way of doing things for, you know, like I said, 2 to 4 years. And so when they come into our situation, which is a complete 180 from what they're used to, where we're asking them to talk, have energy, communicate with their teammates, like at all times. And sometimes these are uncomfortable. They're different things that they haven't done before. And they're like, why are we doing this? You know, and you can tell them and you can teach them, but when it comes to moments in a game and they got to understand they have to talk to their teammates, and that has to be a habit. You got to be able to talk when you're breathing heavy. You got to be able to talk when you're tired. You got to be able to talk when things aren't going your way. They start to understand, like, oh, this is why we do it this way. And so sometimes that trust isn't always 100% given. They might be 50% in, and they might be questioning a lot of things. And then once they start to understand that there's actually a purpose for every single thing that we ask them to do and require them to do, and we teach them at the same time, then they start to realize, like, uh-huh, now I understand. And then they make it their own. Now they incorporate, now they're actually making that choice. And I think that's a big thing too, is as a coach and as a teacher, giving your athletes the power of choice is extremely empowering, right? And sometimes it could be as simple as, like, asking them a question, are you good or are you great today?
Yeah.
You know, like, that's a choice, right? You're asking them a question. And if they say, oh, I'm only good today, then you can start to have a conversation. Well, why are you good? What happened? Did you not sleep enough? Did you miss a meal? Is something going on academically? Because once you give somebody the power of choice, then they can be heard a little bit more, right? Or sometimes, like, I had our women's basketball team this day. I asked one of the girls, hey, like, what do you want to do from a recovery standpoint today? And she said, can we do this? I said, absolutely. You know, so once you give them the power of choice, they feel like they're going to get something too. They have a say in what they're actually doing. They're not just being told what they're doing.
Yeah, I love that. My niece just came with my mother to pick up my puppy for the weekend. But one of the great things my sister told me about raising kids is, you know, tell them to do something. You give them the choice of, do you want to go outside with shorts on, or do you want to go outside with pants on when they want to go outside?
Yeah.
That's good that it lasts from, you know, when they're 1, 2, 3, 4, all the way up to college. And like you said, I mean, it's something that I've experienced in pro hockey is that, you know, we just have a couple of cards that hand out of, this is the extra work to do. You know, not the, do you want to do extra work or do you not want to do extra work? This is your choices of extra work to do. These are the bike options. These are the, you know, tempo run options, things like that. So that's great. But, you know, that little tidbit with just seeing my niece and you going on about choice
parenting isn't really different. You know what I mean? Like, if you, it's behavior. A lot of it comes down to behavioral modification and teaching, right? And so that's what you're doing as a parent, right? You're trying to change behaviors and you're trying to teach them. So ultimately one day when they're on their own, they make the right choices or they do the right things. They can treat themselves, with respect in the society, they can treat others with respect. They understand how to work hard. They understand the value of working hard. Then they understand the value of being consistent in their approach. So, Honestly, you know, being a parent, I've got two kids. Like, I don't see many differences between coaching and parenting, you know.
That's good. So if I get really good as a coach, as a parent, whenever that happens,
you should be, hopefully. Should be knock on wood.
Love
but
it.
there's no playbook for parenting, just to let you know.
So that's all I've been told. Thankfully, that's a little ways off for me. So I think we're good there. But all right. So can you give us a day in the life of you? Not just, you know, I'm sure you get asked that question that basically on every podcast you're on, but where I want to go with that is a day in the life with the, you know, the aspects of leadership that you've imparted on these young athletes, how different it is now versus how, you know, like the little interactions, you know, this would have been different, you know, 20 years ago or things like that. Can you bring us through a day in the life in that sense, if that makes sense?
Yeah, it's, well, I'll start off with, you know, I've got a pretty good, created a pretty good system, of how our kind of weight room runs, where, I usually come in and say, for example, like our women's basketball team tends to be the first group of the day, right? Because we're fortunate of Quinnipiac, what we have is we've kind of practice blocks, and each team will either practice or train during a block. So women's basketball teams tends to be like 8 to 11, men's hockey is 11 to 2, men's basketball is from 1 to 4, and then women's ice hockey is 2 to 5. So like, that's what our typical day would look like. In season, out of season, doesn't necessarily matter. Like, you'll, the only thing that's going to matter is if you're going to train longer or practice longer, right? So if you're in season, practices are going to be longer, so your training session is going to be shorter. You may not be in as frequently. Off season, your practice time is going to be shorter. Your training time is going to be a little bit longer. You might be, your frequency might start to increase within the weight room. But a lot of what we do and what we've taught our student athletes to do is understand how to train. So when they show up, they come in, they grab their file, they grab their card. We typically have some exchange pleasantries, like, how are you doing? Are you good? Are you great? Like, those kind of questions. How do you feel? We try to get and teach our student athletes how to read the sheet, obviously, read the training program, and start to say, these are the things you're going to do on your own. We'll start at this time and we'll go together, and this is where we're going to start. So you're empowering them to be able to, number one, follow directions and do the things that they're supposed to do to try to help prepare themselves so we can improve and get better and have a great training session. And sometimes when they're not doing what they're supposed to do and they're just chit-chatting and then messing around, it kind of, sometimes you got to put them in line and be like, hey, are we ready to go today? Or we're just going to mess around. And so sometimes it might be one of those instances where I'll ask a captain or I'll ask a leader, hey, run the beginning of this work training session while I finish up what I'm doing right now. And then we'll get going at this time. So those are the things that we do. It's sort of, our room is run in a certain way, and they know, every athlete knows how it's going to work, except for any new coming kids. But I'll usually empower the older class, upperclassmen, whether it be a sophomore or junior, and say, hey, take the new people underneath your wing, show them what to do, how to read the sheet, and then we'll get rolling together as a group at, you know, whatever time, 11 o'clock. So that's typically how a training session will kind of run, but that, like, incorporating and implementing the leadership stuff that you had asked about. Whereas I've seen rooms run where an athlete is completely in the dark when they walk in, like, yeah, they're waiting to be held by the hand to say, this is what you need to do now. This is what you need. And I tell them flat out, like, I'm not a hand holder. I will not hold your hand because you will not be able to function when you go to train when you're 30 or 40 years old by yourself. If that's what you're looking for, that I'm not it. Like, I'm going to teach you how to train yourself. And I tell them flat out, like, listen, like, you're not going to be here all year long. Like, you're going to have to go home and you're going to have to train on your own. Or there might be breaks or opportunities when, you're going to go home and maybe you're not training in a professional gym. You're just going to go to Planet Fitness and train. You got to understand how to train by yourself. You got to be able to understand how to take care of yourself. And so those are the things that we want to do, when we train as a group, is really getting them to understand, like, here's the sheet, here's the program, here's how it's going to work. It's up to you to put forth the right amount of effort and the attention to detail to actually yield results. Like, I could write the best training program in the world, but if it's done with a half-ass effort and I compare it to a program that's probably not the best well-written, but it's done with 100% effort, the one with that's done with 100% effort is going to yield way more results and better results than the other one. So getting them to understand how to be purposeful with everything that they do is extremely important. And a lot of that is just teaching. Like, What are they supposed to feel? Like, how is it supposed to be done? Like, what's the purpose of the exercise? So a lot of the time during the beginning of a training session is teaching them those things. But when I write a program, I don't want to have like, you know, three or four exercises that are extremely complex. I'm going to have one complex exercise and other things are going to be pretty simple and pretty easy to understand. Because I don't need them to be wrapped up with too much complexity during a training session. Now, one thing is we've gotten older and I've been here for some time with our older athletes. We can try to introduce a little bit more complexity because their skill level or their comprehension ability is at a higher level than maybe a new person. So we can do those things with them. I don't know if I'm making sense at all, but it's a lot of it's going to depend, right, on where they are. But a lot of it comes down to just really teaching the purpose of every single thing that we do. And that's teaching how to have intent. I think that's the best way that you can actually work on leadership abilities and leadership development within your training sessions.
Love it. What does your staff look like, you know, not only in your weight room, in the athletics department, but, you know, sports specific staff, coaching staff, you know, nutritionists, psychologists, things like that. What does that look like for you guys?
Yeah. So I'm fortunate if like, when I started Quinnipiac, it was just me and I kind of oversaw all of our programs. And over the course of time, I've been fortunate if I've got it, three full-time assistants and they run our other gym, which is about a mile away from here. It's on our other campus. And they are fantastic, right? They are a good mix of professionals that have been around for some time. I've had some younger ones too, but they understand what I'm looking for from a culture standpoint and from a non-negotiable standpoint. And they work to try to introduce that same level of culture and same level of coaching with the other every single other student athlete on campus. So I'm fortunate enough there to have a really good strength and conditioning staff of four full-time people to work with our 20 plus sports. So that's first and foremost. Then we do have a sports psychologist that's full-time and she's been here, I think for 3 or 4 years now, but she's been awesome to have because the things that she teaches is she's got a similar approach to what I have in terms of training. Whereas it's a teaching mindset and they're really trying to develop ownership of their mental skill development to try to help their performance as best as we can. So there tends to be a lot of crossover and carryover, but between what we teach within the weight room and what she teaches them in one-on-one sessions or team sessions. And then we also have a sports nutritionist that kind of works with our athletes on a one-on-one basis. She'll do educational stuff, but she can do consults with them and try to figure out meal plans where I think two of us on our staff are PN level one, so we can do nutrition coaching, but we're not going to do meal plans and all that kind of stuff. So we've got a really well-rounded staff in terms of performance and trying to help our student athletes become the best versions of themselves.
Love it. How do you go about, you know, one, hiring the right people for those roles, the roles that you oversee, but two, once they're a staff member, you know, continuing to educate them on what you want and things like that, and encouraging them to grow in their own as their own coach?
Yeah. Hiring, number one, is it's going to be dependent on what the needs are, right? Like, what are the needs of the position that we're hiring? I can go back to 2014 is when I had the first opportunity to hire a full-time assistant. And at that time, I know I needed somebody that was able to implement the same level of consistency that I could implement. Like, that was the first and foremost thing. I didn't need to have the smartest coach. I didn't need to have the one with the world-renowned reputation. I didn't need to have somebody that was had a PhD or done a ton of research. Like, that wasn't going to help us. At that point, what I needed was somebody that was going to be willing to show other people how to work hard, how to be consistent with their attitudes and their efforts, and how to really develop a 24/7 attitude when it comes to athletic performance and athletic development. And then as we've matured and as we've grown as an athletic department, we've tried to hire people that aren't just good fits, but ones that can help our staff become more well-rounded in areas that we may not be well-versed in, whether it be somebody who's got a little bit more of a background in psychology, whether it be someone who's got a little bit more of a background in strength development or nutrition development. Key areas where we can try to help make our staff a little bit more well-rounded too, so we can try to help the student athlete become the best versions of themselves. So that's number one, I think, with hiring. And then when it comes to staff development, I think this is a work in progress at all times. The challenging thing for myself is that we have two separate facilities, so I don't get to see my staff on a regular basis. And so I'm fortunate enough that I do have an assistant athletic director that's on our staff, Sergio Marino, that I've worked with since 2009. He's been head at two other institutions, has been around the block, extremely understanding of what our mission and vision is. And he kind of runs our other facility. And so I'm really grateful to be able to have somebody that I can trust to understand the culture and the mission and our philosophy of what it is that, you know, we're trying to empower all of our student athletes, and then help develop the two assistants that I have down there as well. One thing that we've been recently doing is really just trying to bring in some people from my network and people that I've known for a long time and try to help educate them so they can expand their own personal network. So just continuing education opportunities that way is how best to try to help educate them. But like we said before, the number one thing is relationship development and really getting the athletes to be able to trust in us and the things that we're selling them on a regular basis so they can put forth a greater level of effort so they can try to get more results and better results.
Love that. Our Boston's assistant coach is Tim Lavoisier. He's one of your ex-interns, I believe.
Disciples, let's say that.
Disciples. He's told a story a couple times that I think fits well within this development question that I'm asking. I believe it was with men's hockey. You charged him with running a dynamic warm-up.
Oh, boy. Yeah, I remember this.
Just absolutely butchered to hell and back.
Oh, yeah.
And then he basically asked for round two afterwards. And I think that, like you said, how you respond to adversity is, you know, says a lot about you. Obviously he had the right response of, you know, I'll do it better next time. So like I said, I've heard the story from his point of view, but I wanted to hear the story from your point of view, because I also, you know, it's a good example of probably the right way to respond to something like that. A great learning opportunity for Tim. And I think a great learning opportunity for any young coach that's put in that position.
It was awesome. I actually shared this story, I think, last week with some of the interns that we have. So one of the things that we try to do, our internship program is pretty diverse. Like sometimes we've get athletes or sorry, not athletes, interns who've had a couple of experiences underneath their belt. Sometimes we've interns have had no experiences underneath their belt. Sometimes we've had interns who are grad students, and on the verge of earning like an assistant job. So we run the gamut with experience when it comes to interns. And Tim, God bless him, was an intern. I think he was a senior at Springfield at the time. I think he had like one experience underneath his belt, maybe two, but he really wanted to become a hockey strength and conditioning coach. And we've had people who flat out said, like, I don't know if I want to be a college strength coach. I think I want to do personal training. So there's those individuals, we won't put them in a group. Like we won't put them in front of the group because we're just setting them up to fail, because that's not helping them get to where that is that they want to do. But Tim, he said he wanted to work with groups, he'd work with teams. So in those instances, I'll say, all right, you're going to run the warm-up. Now, if you've ever seen us train, like our athletes know exactly what to do. Like they know how to do it. They've been coached, they've been drilled. On the details. Like I am extremely attentive to details when it comes to a coach, when it comes to being a coach, and our athletes understand that too. And oftentimes they might know more than what the intern knows. So Tim, I said, Tim, you're going to run the warm up in the core today. And he's like, okay. So he goes up and he's missing details right, and he's missing details left. He's not doing it to the way the athletes understand or what they're supposed to be doing. And they absolutely lit him up. They're like, you know, for example, like if we're going to do leg lowers, I often say hands at your side, arms are across your chest, hands over your chest, hands overhead. That's one thing like he missed. And but he did it with like every single exercise. They were like, Tim, where are our hands? Tim, where are our feet? What position, which way are we facing? All these things. And because his level of detail wasn't on par with what our athletes are expected or what they're used to, which is not uncommon. But at the end of it, well, actually in the middle of it, like I could see him turning red and see him starting to get a little embarrassed in adversity, right? Like he's caught in a shit storm right now, right? Like, so he's trying to figure out how to get out of it. And he doesn't have the confidence or the reps to fall back on to get himself out of those situations yet. And afterwards, it was, he knew he messed up and he knew, but it, again, like our athletes know how to do things. So it's not a critical situation by any means. And it was an opportunity for him to learn, an opportunity for him to improve and get feedback. And I gave him feedback and I said, this is what we need to get better at. These are the things you missed. These are things that need to improve. And that was a Monday. And then the next day they came in, cause it was in season. It was a Wednesday. He said, I want to run it. I said, are you sure? I was like, it's only been a day. And he's like, no, I got it. And he must, I don't know what he did. If he just studied it or if like the, he went through it himself. I have no idea, but he absolutely killed it. And the athletes earned he got a lot of credibility from the athletes because they knew on Monday he butchered the warm up. And whereas Wednesday he killed it like a rock star. And it was a lesson for Tim and a lesson for anybody who listens to this. It's like the confident, if you want to be confident in your speaking ability, if you want to be confident in front of others, it comes down to how well prepared you are. That's the only way you're ever going to earn confidence. It comes down to how much work you're willing to put in to ultimately help your preparation. And again, like, I don't know what Tim did, if he went home and studied the training program, but he was prepared. He was prepared for his moment and his opportunity to succeed and shine through in that next opportunity he got. And so it's a great story for Tim, and I'm glad he still shares that because I think that those are one of the moments that really helped him, springboard his career and really become a little bit more confident in his speaking abilities in front of other people.
Yeah, I love that. I wanted to bring that up not only because it's a funny story, but also because it's just it. I think it perfectly sums up everything we've talked about to this point of, you know, the room that you run over there is to the level of the athletes know what they're doing to the point that if you put someone in charge that does not know what they're doing, the athlete is going to know more.
Yes.
They're going to give it to them. And then there's the opportunity for learning and for redemption. And then when you do that learning and that redemption that you get the respect that is, due to you from those athletes. So I think that perfectly sums up kind of everything we've talked about to this point. So I love that. Thanks for sharing that.
You're welcome. Yeah. Thanks for bringing that up. That's a, that's one I won't forget, but it is, I think you said it just really succinctly that I want the athletes to know what they're supposed to do and how it's supposed to be done to the level which is expected so that it could be done when nobody is here. Like if I had an assistant here and if I was out of town or if I had to travel the team during playoffs, like they know exactly what is expected. We might do some different exercises that they might not know, but they understand that they're not going to screw around. They're not going to mess around. It's not an opportunity to get a day off because it's a substitute teacher or somebody else is in charge. Like they know how to function without me, which is what I want them to be able to do.
Love that. So we're going to end. I want to kind of end, like I said, in the beginning of this podcast, this is my first one. So I may try a different couple things, but I think I want to try to end every podcast with some like wild card questions. So we got one on social media when I was interviewing you. This actually, I wouldn't say this is a wild card. I think it's just a fan submitted question. The other two are wild cards. What is the best way to maintain body weight of athletes, in season? That was the phrase of the question, and more speak towards your role as you said, you're, certified, in that. Kind of speak more towards your role as helping them guide with their nutrition on campus and season, things like that.
Yeah, so I think the if you want to try to maintain body weight during in season, it comes down to calories, right? Something that I heard from a longtime NHL strength coach, Doug McKinney, he said, and I took it to heart, is the scale is how you assess your nutrition, right? And so if you're under eating, under drinking, the number on the scale is probably going to go down. And if you don't want that number to go down, then you need to make sure that you're drinking consistently and that you're eating consistently. And so if you start to see habitually that the number starts to decrease and there's a pattern, then you probably need to create some level of intervention within your daily routine, whether it be consuming more food, maybe doubling your portion sizes, trying to increase calories by getting a snack, eating more fat in your diet, trying to eat more caloric dense foods to try to get your weight back up. So that's the first and foremost thing, is try to make sure that you have consistent patterns of eating and drinking enough fluids. And the other thing too is, like, if you're a heavy sweater, you got to know that you got to be able to replace those fluids a little bit more effectively. You've got to be a little more conscientious about it, increasing your salt, increasing, making sure that you're walking around with a water bottle at all times. Those are the biggest things that we've known to be able to keep body weight up, right? And so we'll assess body fat too, but in context of this particular question, when it comes to body weight, it really comes down to nutritional interventions and just making sure that you're eating enough calories consistently enough. Like, sometimes we'll often say, like, if an athlete's lost like 3 to 4 pounds between weigh-ins, you know, I'll say, are you eating enough? And they're like, well, I'm eating three times a day. I'm like, eat 4 or 5, eat more. And then we make those changes and their weight goes back up. So a lot of it's just being able to assess through the scale. Again, if it's something that they value, if they're concerned that their weight is decreasing and there's a concern for it, then you've got to make sure that you just introduce some regular intervention. Sometimes how to hold them accountable to it is I say, take pictures of what you're eating and then send them to me all the time. I don't have to do that with a lot of athletes anymore, but, we do a pretty good job of maintaining, and just, we're lucky that we have a lot of snacks at our disposal at all times within the locker room, within the lounges. Muscle milkshakes. It's, you know, we have a high emphasis on food and making sure that there's enough at all times.
Love that. All right. This is the wild card one. So in my, you know, deep dive of research on you, I found out that you were spin certified.
Mm.
And over the summer, I caught the Soul Cycle bug. We're not going to get into how I caught the Soul Cycle bug, but I've been smashing Soul Cycle classes. So
good for you.
With being spin certified, am I finding you on the podium of any Soul Cycle classes anytime soon, or what do you do with that?
No, that was a college job. That was something I did to try to earn a little bit more extra money during college. It was one of those things. I went to the University of Connecticut, and I think it was it might have been 2000 or 2001. We Coach Martin and Andrew Hootie, we got the. Our fitness center had just gotten a bunch of spin bikes, right? And Mad Dog Athletics was getting kind of big, and spin classes were getting kind of big. 2000, 2001. And I remember they got certified to teach courses. And one of the jobs that I had in college was working at the rec center. And I remember they offered a class, and I asked Coach Martin Hoodie, I'm like, do you think this is a good idea? And he's like, and they're like, absolutely. It was a weekend course. And I think they paid for it too. They helped pay for it. And it was a two day course, and I got certified, and I was able to teach classes to try to earn some more money. So I'm far from that. Like I don't think I'm going to teach any more Soul Cycle classes, but I will tell you that those bikes were Schwinn's, and in our weight room we've got 12 Schwinn AC Sport or AC Performance ones, but they're one of the best bikes. I love. They've definitely changed the resistance. They used to be friction-based pads on them, but now from a wear and tear standpoint, we don't have to worry about those. They're all magnetic, like most of those bikes are now. But those are some of my favorite bikes, and all started from spinning. I have a Peloton at home, so I love the Peloton.
Love it. Count it. We can get you on some of the Peloton classes instructor on there. So I love that. All right. Last question. Outside of the gym, totally strength and conditioning related, where are we finding you? Are we, you said you had wife and kids and things like that, but totally just, like I said, outside of the gym, what do you like to do?
Honestly, right now it's because my kids are consumed with their own sports. It's probably, watching them play, watching them perform. And they're getting a little bit older where they're starting to take things a little bit more seriously. Like, my son's 13 years old. baseball is kind of his thing. You know, he's in the gym, he's training, he's, you know, he's a little bit more focused on like his nutrition and taking care of his body, understanding how to become a student of the game a little bit more effectively. So it's honestly, it's just fun watching him play. He's in basketball season right now too, but just fun watching them perform and do their own thing. And my daughter's a basketball kind of, and she plays baseball as well too. But like, that's honestly, you know, you don't have kids now, but one day you'll start to see like, there isn't a lot of time for yourself. Once you got kids and you're running around to their sporting events, and now they're going to get social now too. So trying to drive them around, and I kid that I'm an Uber driver, part-time Uber driver for them. So that's what I'm doing. Driving around, driving them places.
Love that. Well, as a kid who grew up, playing sports and driving around New England with my dad and my mom going to hockey games and sisters gymnastics and soccer events and things like that, you know, some of the best times they had were in the cars or in the hotels and things like that. So from the other side of that equation, I appreciate that and love to hear it. And as the podcast wraps up, I appreciate you coming on, being the first guest with the new host, and yeah, love it. Appreciate it.
Pat, I really appreciate the time, and you know, hopefully you're going to go on a run with these podcasts. So I feel pretty honored to be the first one, and your time as a new host.
Thank you so much for listening.
Love it.
As always, you can find links to everything discussed in the show notes.
You too. Thank you.
And at the official website of SCAP, prohockeystrength.com. There you can also find articles, webinars, and all sorts of educational content that we as strength coaches not only make, but also read, watch, and rely upon ourselves to continue to grow as coaches and continue to grow our field as a whole. Again, thanks so much for listening.